Our hostess with the mostest, Moose Haas, is across the globe right now. Unfortunately, he could not be here, so I am stuck with the hosting duties, but I'm up to it. I feel bad, actually, because this is the weekend of movies, of cinema. They are back. We are talking about Barbie and Oppenheimer, a.k.a. hashtag Barbieheimer. I think that's what it was.
Barbenheimer.
Barbenheimer. See, thank you. And that is Meredith Loftus, our guest today. She'll be joining us for both reviews. Meredith, how are you doing?
I am doing fantastic. You know, life in plastic really is fantastic these days.
Yes. And Benny, you are still in America. You don't travel as much as Moose. How's it going? How's your weekend? Did you feel the joy of cinema at your Cineplex this weekend?
I cannot say that I personally did, but there were many people in the cinema that clearly were.
Yeah, it was funny. I live outside of Burbank, and AMC Burbank 16 was like a hot mess this whole weekend. Variety was tweeting about it. I guess there was a fire drill. Meredith, did you venture out to AMC Burbank 16 this weekend?
So I was at 16 on Wednesday to see Barbie. So I missed all of the mayhem there. And then I was up the hill at City Walk for my Barbenheimer double feature. So, but yeah, I heard mayhem took place at 16 and I'm like, so glad I missed that.
I'm going to say about you. I saw Wednesday. We saw Barbie on Wednesday and we saw Oppenheimer. No, wait, sorry. Thursday we saw Barbie and then Friday we saw Oppenheimer and it wasn't that bad. It was definitely busier than usual. But it looks like Saturday, Sunday was just like a nuts. Taylor Swift ticket concert. It was like insane, man. So anyway, talking about movies and these movies and cinema being back, a lot of discussion this weekend was about the box office. Greta Gerwig, I think, became the most successful opening for a female director ever. And I believe the film before this was Captain Marvel, which was co-directed by a female. It was a husband and wife duo. So huge numbers for her. And Oppenheimer, to me, is actually a little bit more surprising because that movie made over $80 million for a three-hour, basically a lot of people talking in rooms, epic. I mean, because at 3 hours, you're not going to get as many showtimes as, say, Barbie got. And it's not an IP, which is Barbie is one of the biggest IPs you could have, especially for young girls. It's a toy that every other generation has grown up with. Oppenheimer, I mean, I knew about the guy, but I didn't. He wasn't like, oh, I can't wait to see Oppenheimer movie. It was really Christopher Nolan was the IP for that film. So huge weekend box office numbers. So before we really get into the review for these films, let me ask you first, Meredith, what do you think about this box office result? Are you happy for Greta?
I am so happy for Greta. And the fact that it's not even that this is the biggest opening for a female director. She blew out Top Gun Maverick out of the water. Okay. Like, let's not minimize the fact that, like, this is one of the best openings we've had all year. And this really does feel like the enthusiasm is back for theaters again. So for Greta to do super well, and then you also have Christopher Nolan coming in. I believe this is the third highest best opening for an R-rated film. Which this is Christopher Nolan's first R-rated film, if I'm not mistaken. So, like,
well, Insomnia was radar, but his Insomnia. First mainstream.
Yes. So, like, this is a really big deal, and it's just as a fan of both of these filmmakers, of the movies themselves, and just being a fan of film, like, it's just excited to see people rally for movies. And I mean, I love superhero movies, like. These aren't superhero movies, and people are this hyped and excited about them. It's great.
Yeah, the interesting about that is when you think of rated R, like big premieres, you think Deadpool, you think 300, Zack Snyder's 300. This is Oppenheimer, a literally historical epic in some ways. But I mean, the movie really is like a lot of guys just in rooms talking with a lot of flash of Christopher Nolan style in there. So, Benny, let me ask you. You know, you're middle America. You said the theater was pretty busy. Why do you think everybody came out this weekend for both these movies? Was it just a great ad campaign? Because the ads really made it feel like an event for this weekend. So did you feel that? What did you think?
I think it did build up an event for Barbie, but also like the collective. Like, I think a lot of it was the fact that these two movies, they came as sort of a package deal on the same day. I think the box office would have been really undercut had one of them blinked and moved earlier in the year. So I think it that drove Oppenheimer's box office especially way up, because a lot of people were doing the Barbenheimer double feature. So I don't think it on its own would have pulled like this. And Barbie actually had the biggest domestic opening of any movie this year. It beat Mario. It beat everything out, like, once everything was adjusted. And so when I went to the theater here in Middle America, usually when I go to a movie, it's me and five other people in their 60s watching the movie. That's it. When I went this weekend, the entire parking lot was full. The lines were out the door, and it was just a cavalcade of people wearing pink, dressed up as Ken and dressed up as Barbie. It was almost like a showing of the Rocky Horror Picture Show, but on a much grander scale. So I think it created like a little cultural movement. The last time I seen this was when Black Panther, you know, first came out.
Yeah, good point.
And it caught on in a very similar way. And so just once in a while, it just catches lightning culturally like that. And I think that's what happened.
Well, whoever did the social for Barbie, I think needs a raise, because they really did eventize. Yes, I think that's a word.
Eventize.
There you go, Meredith. I really think they did a good job making this something that just not people like us who are going to go see these movies no matter what, but the general public really felt like there was this fun atmosphere. And there was, like you said, cosplay, and there's people that were mixing up Barbie with Oppenheimer. I saw like cross-play, and I was like, wow, that's awesome. I mean, just something to have your imagination go again. You know, as a younger JTE, I probably would have saw both these movies in one day. As an older man, I had to split it up from Thursday to Friday. I just don't know if I could have done 5 hours. I probably could have, but I'm a older man now, and I'm lazy, and I needed to spread them apart by a day or two. And I'm glad I did, because they're very different movies. And I can't wait to get into that. Meredith, I mean, I guess there's some themes that are shared. I'll give you that.
I think these movies are a bit more in common than we want to give them credit for. We can save that for later, but let's not dismiss completely the parallels found in both.
Okay, well, let's start off this Barbenheimer, whatever you want to call it. I'm never going to remember it. With Barbie, our Barbie review, because this I saw Barbie then Oppenheimer. Meredith, was the same thing for you?
Mm-hmm, that's the same for me.
Benny, was that your order, or did you see Oppenheimer first?
I saw Oppenheimer first.
Okay, interesting. So I think at the end of the both reviews, we'll talk a little bit about that. But Barbie was a film that, I'll be honest, when I saw the trailers, I was like, okay, they're going for something a little different here. And Greta Gerwig, I do trust, though. I have been a big fan of her for the last couple films. Real big fan of Lady Bird. And even though Little Women's not the type of movie I run out to see, it was such a well-done film. And I grew up in the 90s. I grew up with the old-school Little Women. My sisters used to watch that on repeat. So it had to win me over a little bit. And she did a really great job in that film. And you put Bob Odenkirk in the last scene, you got me. I was already – Jerry had me, but that just kind of put it over the edge. So I went into Barbie and I said to myself, okay, from the trailers, a lot of it took place in the Barbie world. And I was kind of like, man, I think a lot of the humor is going to come from when she gets out of that Barbie world. And after seeing the movie, that's not quite what happened. So what we're going to do is we're going to go around and give our general thoughts about the film, and then we'll get into full spoiler discussion. And I'll just start off by saying I had a great time with this movie. But I will say this, there was a moment in the middle towards the front section of the film where I got a little worried, because I really liked the opening. And there was and I'll get to that in spoilers, where I was like, oh no, I have to lose me a little bit. But then it was nothing but up from there. Like, I had such a good time and a smile on my face throughout this film. I think Greta Gerwig had a great script that she did with her husband, Noah Baumbach. And while the movie at times I think can be heavy handed, because it's done in a comedic way, it didn't bother me. It actually added to the humor. There's some films, a film that I love is called Gravity with Sandra Bullock. Great space film. But some of the themes are so heavy-handed with the visuals in that movie, it bothered me a little bit. I still love that movie, but there are times where I was like, all right, I want to be like, come on, director, pull it back a little bit. But when you're doing something like this, it enhances the comedy in a lot of ways. It reminded me of the inverse is Anchorman. Anchorman is one of the best comedies, but it is playing on gender and the, you know, sexism of men in the 70s and how women were, you know, mistreated in the workplace. And they used that absurdity to enhance what was just so stupid back in those days. This movie is doing that in a more modern sense, and but doing it with such a sharp eye for comedy. And the script at times hit me as a cinephile, like, to my funny bone. And I'll get to some more of that later. But I got to say, I think she did a great job of this film. I think she knocked it out of the park. I think Greta Gerwig, you know, it's funny. She stars as an actress, and then she moved on to directing and writing. I think she's got to be in the top. She's one of the top directors in Hollywood right now after this weekend. And you know what? The proof's in the pudding. She delivered on this movie above and beyond what I expected. And I also got to give a shout out to Ryan Gosling. He killed me in this movie. He killed me. And I feel bad saying, like, he was the highlight of the movie for me. But maybe because I'm a guy and I watched it and I just understood what he was doing. And I kind of related to some of the jokes that he was going through. So that's another thing I think that's really good about this movie. For the female empowerment, I think the females are going to get so much out of this movie. But I also think the guys are going to get so much out of this movie because of how they're lampooning just guys in general and that whole dynamic between guys and girls in the real world. Again, a lot of stuff I'll get into spoilers, but Meredith, what did you think of Barbie?
Yeah, so as a woman who played with a lot of Barbies back in her day, you know, I was going to be at this movie no matter what, because Barbie is such like an integral part of my childhood. And for me, I've been such a big fan of Greta Gerwig since I saw Lady Bird the first time. Little Women is one of my all-time faves that she has done. The way that she adapted that book is just so well done. So I had full confidence when I knew that she was coming in to do Barbie. I'm like, Margot really went for her guns here with, because she is a producer on the film as well, like going after Greta was the game-changing move, because I don't think this movie would have worked as well without Greta behind the camera as a director and co-writing the script with Baumbach. As you mentioned, JTE, this script is so sharp, but it's also equally heartfelt in ways that for me, I was like knocked back by, which we can get into spoiler specific scenes that really like captures like the complexity of what it means to be a woman in our day and age. And it's a consistent theme that you see in her films with Lady Bird, with Little Women. So I knew it was going to happen and she was going to give it such like heart and just the depth that it deserves. But there are scenes that like I've seen it twice that I tear up over every time. But then like 30 seconds earlier, she had me like rolling laughing over stuff. It is such a great balancing act that she is able to do. It's also this beautiful homage to like 1950s stage musicals. You're talking like there is no use of CG in Barbie Land. All of that is like painted backdrops, really practical effects are happening. You want to just touch everything and just be a part of Barbie Land. Like the production design, the costumes are just like out of the park here. We really like went for it. The soundtrack is fantastic. Margot Robbie is phenomenal. Will Ferrell, never change. Michael Cera, never change. Ryan Gosling is totally going to get nominated for an Oscar, and I really want him to perform I'm Just Ken at the Oscars. That's just wishful thinking for me. But I adore Barbie. The second it was finished with the best mic drop ending to be done in a movie so far this year. Like it was profoundly hilarious. Sorry to Oppenheimer, but like this one wins it for me as far as an ending goes. But it was just so great. We can talk about it in spoilers, but on the whole, I just really love what Greta did. She did it, and she deserves all the accolades right now.
You made a great point. A lot of practical effects, much like Nolan, who's basically on record said no CGI in this movie. So two directors using, you know, practical sets and practical filmmaking at the best way possible, in my opinion. Benny, you are somebody every week. I have no idea where you're going to come from or what your opinion is going to be. You're like Two-Face. You're going to flip that coin. It's either going to be heads or tails. I have no idea. So I can't wait to hear what you thought of Barbie. Go ahead.
It's going to be one of those weeks that I am the voice of dissent with Barbie. So I think going in, Barbie was promising two things, which was comedy and a sociological commentary. I think it was very successful as a sociological commentary, very unsuccessful as a comedy.
Wow. Yeah,
so okay. Like, I watched this entire movie. I laughed one time. And the theater that I was in, you know, the people around me, silence. Wow. So like, just the movie, I didn't think it was funny.
Okay.
But in all fairness, I don't particularly think Lady Bird is funny either. So, you know, if you enjoy that, that is awesome. It's just, I didn't find it funny. Now, the sociological commentary, I thought it was pretty successful at. I wish it hadn't relied on speeches to get its most pointed movie moments across. I kind of wish those had been woven into the story. But like I said, that's just my take. I'm going to be the voice of dissent today.
Well, here's what I'll say. I think out of all the genres of film, comedy is the most subjective. Because I think, you know, a horror movie's scary. A drama has dramatic scenes. But everybody kind of has a different take on comedy. Some people love Monty Python and Holy Grail. I just don't really vibe with that comedy. But it's considered a comedy classic. And I totally understand that because it's just history has proven me wrong. It's just not my kind of comedy. Yeah, it's just not my kind of comedy. So at the end of the day, I can't argue with you and be like, oh, you didn't think it was funny, but it's funny because I think comedy is the most subjective. But Meredith, go ahead. Anything you'd like to respond to Benny?
I mean, I'm just meeting you for the first time. So I do want to like respect your opinions and just be as in that by all means. But for you to think that the only emotional scenes happened in the monologue scenes is like, I teared up personally over the scene when she is meeting the older woman who is actually their production designer in costume. One of the most poignant scenes in the whole, and it's just one small little moment. And going into spoilers for certain jokes that I am curious how you as men reacted to certain pointed jokes.
Well, tell you what, let me take the handcuffs off. We'll now go into full spoilers and discuss in this film. And I will say for me, I thought the movie was hilarious. I thought it was very funny. So I'm with Meredith on this one, but again, I can understand if you didn't find it funny. So Meredith, what were some jokes that really stood out to you? And then I'd love to hear what Benny's response were to those scenes.
Okay. Well, for one, I, as a woman in the film space, I very much identified with the scene where one of the Barbies was going in to be like, I've never seen The Godfather. And the guy immediately stopping what he's doing in order to explain like how great this film is. I've been in those situations one too many times, and my theater laughed every time for that, as well as the Snyder joke. The Snyderverse joke was very on point. Obviously, the final mic drop scene when she's saying, like, I'm here to see a gynecologist was perfect.
That was the one laugh that I had.
The one laugh. Wow.
Well, here's what's funny. With Benny, he lives in the middle of America. Me and Meredith live in LA, which is Film Geek Central. And I think Greta Gerwig, while the movie has so much humor throughout, you could tell a lot of jokes are specifically for film lovers and people, I think, that are like in the community that love film. I think the Godfather joke is a great example. Of course, I'm sure that it's universal for a lot of people who just love the Godfather. But yeah, the Zack Snyder, like, I have relatives who probably never heard of Zack Snyder's Justice League. So that joke's going to go right over their head. But someone like me, who's really into pop culture and really into movie news and followed everything that happened with Zack Snyder's Justice League, that joke hit me so hard and I was laughing my head off. Benny, was there any performances that you thought were comedic? Because I think, like I said earlier, Ryan Gosling, almost steals the movie. He is so funny.
Sublime.
Did he work for you, or did it just kind of not work for you?
The performances was fine. I just didn't find it funny. And that's just like, that's a feeling thing. It's nothing that anyone did wrong with it. I didn't laugh. Like, the jokes weren't particularly creative to me. You know, it felt like a fancy version of Smurfs: The Lost Village. That's what the movie felt like to me.
I can't even respond to that reference because I never saw any of those Smurf movies.
It's a similar thing. The Smurfs live in Smurf world. They come into this reality and then they have to deal with this reality. Now, this is obviously much better made than Smurfs: The Lost Village, but I didn't laugh at Smurfs: The Lost Village either. Like, the fish out of water coming from fantasy land to, you know, this land, it doesn't work. Almost in any movie, that doesn't work for me. So a lot of the jokes, I was just like, eh, oh well.
Well, that's interesting you say that, because the portion of this movie that didn't work for me the most was, I actually liked when they finally entered the real world and they're in Venice Beach. But when she goes to Mattel, it didn't feel like the real world. It felt like a heightened reality in a lot of ways, which I guess Mattel kind of created Barbie Land. So maybe everything in that building is also a heightened reality.
Well, I mean, based on the scene, like in the boardroom, like you see Warner Brothers Discovery behind them, and then you see the Hollywood sign out off a different window. So from that moment on, I was like, this is a heightened reality of Century City in LA. And so that is how I treated, especially that chase scene in Mattel itself. Yeah. Like, that was peak. This is like 1950s movie musical rules and heightened reality. So, or at least that's how I took it.
Yeah, and I took it that way also. But I think that for me, when I first hit Venice Beach, it didn't feel that way. And then when they went to Century City, it turned back into that. And I said, oh, okay. I thought this was going to be a hardcore, kind of like, remember the Brady Bunch movie from the 90s, mm-hmm. where like they live in the sitcom world, but anytime they went outside in the Hollywood, it was just regular Hollywood. That's kind of what I expected this movie. And when it started happening, I was like, okay, I'm not quite sure where the tone shift is supposed to be here. Like, they're in the real world, but now it's like really over the top real world. So it's not really the real world. But before that, you had the great scene where she confronts the daughter at the school, and her mm-hmm. daughter is like, brings her right back to reality.
Mm-hmm.
But here, so that was like maybe the only section of the film that I had a little bit issues with because of the tone. But literally, they go right back to Barbie Land. And from that point on, it was just everything worked for me. And it was hilarious. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing I was really surprised about this movie, because I kind of already in my head had figured the movie. I thought the movie's going to be, she's in Barbie Land. 80% of the movie is going to be in the real world, and then maybe she'll go back for the last 10 minutes. I actually like that Greta brought it right back to Barbie Land. And the fact that Ryan Gosling went to the real world and said, wait a minute, Ken's back in Barbie world are basically like, you know, second class citizens. In the real world, we kind of rule everything. And then he takes that back to Barbie Land. And that's where I think some of the best humor comes from, because these guys, they don't know what they're doing. They're kind of idiots, but they're going to try to run everything. And that's where a lot of, I feel like, the sharpest writing is. The PR, just Greta did such a good job of, it's hard to, I know we're spoilers, but like, I don't even know how to describe it, because the movie's unlike anything I've really seen before. It's not really like any other satire that I've seen before. And that's, to me, it was like such a cool development in the story. And that's why I think Gosling really, at that point, kind of goes to another level. And listen, I was a big Stallone fan. Several references to Stallone. When the three shots of him, like, from the 70s and, like, a fur coat, he basically is copying Stallone's style back in Barbie Land. There's even Rocky posters at one point when he's in the gym. And I was just like, okay, this movie's got me. Like, I love everything they're doing right now. And so, yeah, when they went back to the Barbie Land, I really like that battle for Barbie Land, really, honestly. The men trying to take it over, the women kind of, you know, at first fall into place and are like, oh, this is like a spa for my brain. And mm-hmm. it's like, they're like getting him drinks. And I was just laughing so much. And then the
Matchbox 20 song.
Oh, man, with all of them on the beach. So those things just all worked and what had me cracking up throughout the second half of this film. So Meredith, I just kind of went over a lot. Is there anything out of that, you know, in this movie you just really want to point out?
I mean, I agree. Like, I love how the comedy, like, I was getting a feeling that something was going to happen to Ken based on the promotional stuff of, like, she's everything and he's just Ken. And I'm like,
yeah,
there's something that is going to happen there. So when he decides to bring patriarchy back to back to Barbie Land, I thought that was like an interesting turn. I do think Ryan Gosling is having the most fun in this movie. Like, he is so like, he radiates Kennergy, and you can even see it in like when he initially dismisses stereotypical Barbie once she comes back. Like, mm-hmm. he still really cares about her, but like, he's also like, this is my time now, and I'm like owning it. And I kind of like seeing those like bits from him. But then him leaning into Matchbox 20 push for 4 hours is commitment. I love it. And I love his dance scene as well. Actually, all of the Kins do such a great job at, yes. like with the dance numbers and the fight scenes on the beach. That was just so much fun.
Simu Liu, he had like one of those.
Simu Liu, just, oh my gosh. Him coming in with a ribbon.
Yeah.
And I loved their rivalry that they had throughout the movie. I just thought it was so fun. But I mean, I just want to just shift back a little bit to like, I do think this is a movie about like an existential crisis of like, yeah. fate of stereotypical Barbie kind of coming into her own of like, what does she want her life to be? And like, now that she has experienced change, which she's like, I've never wanted anything to ever change, to come to the place of, I want to live in the real world. I want to be human. That is such a, like, that is such an interesting, like, place to take Barbie. And I like that it came really organically throughout it. I didn't feel like it was like, oh, and this is just how it's going to end the end. All of her scenes with Ray Perlman kill me. Like, her stuff with the creator of Barbie, it just, there's such a warmth to it and such empathy to her and the celebration of what it means to, like, be a woman, you know? Like, there are messy bits in life. Like, you will die, but there's so much beauty to be had in it. So that final montage you see of like women of different ages mm-hmm. and ethnicities, just seeing different parts of their life, it just kind of like brought it all together for me. And so that's why this movie is going, it has hit me very profoundly. And I know it's hit a lot of other women who have seen this very profoundly as well.
Interesting. Benny, let me ask you a question. So you said you don't like the fish out of water aspect of like this movie and the Smurfs movie. So I feel like they spend really a small time doing that in this film. It's only maybe a 10 to 15 minute block. How did you feel once you went back to Barbie and the Kens took over? Did any of that work for you? Or like, were you chuckling at least? Or were you just like, none of this is working?
I wish I could give you more than that. I just don't find the movie funny. I don't. There's no other way I can explain that. I don't mean it to hurt anybody. I'm so sorry, good. America, but it's not funny to me.
Guys.
So I'll go ahead.
It's your opinion that it's not funny. Like, yeah. I don't know if it's like just a blanket statement to say it's not funny. Because for me, it's very funny, but for you, it's not.
I believe that I am the locust of all truth in this reality. Well, I think it's okay if I make the blanket statement.
So, curious, Benny, where are some of your favorite comedies so we get a taste of what kind of comedies you enjoy?
I
know you're a big 80s guy.
Well, oh yeah, I have notoriously bad taste in movies, JT. Like, this will never be a Hamburger the Motion Picture or Caddyshack 2. These are the kind of things that I find entertaining, so please take it as a compliment that I don't find the movie funny.
That is a good point. Out of the performances outside of Gosling and obviously Margot Robbie, who are both fantastic, what side characters stood out for you? I'll start with you, Meredith.
I was a big fan of Michael Cera as Alan. Yes. I thought he was very funny and he was used very well. I thought America Ferrera was very great. I love Will Ferrell kind of giving like almost Buddy the Elf a little bit here. Just kind of like his mannerisms was so like fun. I really liked Alexandra Shipp as her Barbie. And I love Issa Rae as well when she came in and the Mattel sign bleeped her out. I wish we had a little bit more of her and some of the side Barbies. Like, I wish we had a little bit more of Dua Lipa and John Cena, the mermaid Barbies on the side. Yeah, those are quick. those were blink and you'll miss them. But I was really a fan of... Oh my gosh, what am I talking about? Kate McKinnon is Weird Barbie. She was so funny, just the splits and the facial expression she was making. Like, she was so committed to Weird Barbie, which I know many, many girls that had either Weird Barbie or they had a brother who took one of their Barbies and just went to town on them. So like, she just embodied that so well, and I thought she was hilarious. And the montage of depressed Barbie, we should have had a depressed Barbie in there as well.
That one got a huge laugh from my audience watching Pride and Prejudice. I agree. I think Greta Gerwig did a great job of the cast. I mean, I remember seeing the trailer and seeing all those names thinking, my God, everybody came to play for this movie. I think Simu Liu was great in this. I thought he was such a great rival for Ken as another Ken. I thought all the ladies did a great job. Issa Rae obviously was fantastic. Kate McKinnon constantly doing splits, and she had the Barbie dog who was like pooping. Yep. I thought all that was so weird and funny. It at times gave me like a big Pee-wee's Big Adventure vibe with the practical sets and just how outlandish some of the things in this movie were. So yeah, I think the cast overall did great. And I agree, Michael Cera as was Alan.
Alan.
Yeah. He's just there. It's like there's one of him. I love that there's just one Alan. Yes. And they had a lot of fun just making fun of Mattel's choices in the past. They had the pregnant Barbie, which like Will Ferrell kept touching on. I thought that was hilarious. Benny, so I know the comedy didn't work for you, but were any of these, what do you think about the cast overall? Do you think everybody played up to their part?
Yeah, I think they did a good job. Michael Cera was really good and for what he was doing. And I don't know her name offhand, the young woman that played the daughter for American Ferrera. Oh, yeah. I really liked her a lot. Like if I had my preference, I would have liked to have just seen sort of like a mother-daughter relationship with American Ferrera and her. They were probably the more interesting characters in the movie for me. And just like, you know, a mom trying to hide her emo self from her daughter who is, you know, in that stage of life. To me, that would have been a pretty interesting movie to watch as opposed to the Barbie movie, which, you know, I don't really have a nostalgic connection to, but I really did like their dynamic and I wish they would have had more time in the movie, even though they were, you know, pretty main characters.
That's a good point because they do set them up a lot in the beginning and they do kind of take a little bit of a backseat in the second half because Ken's taken over Barbieland. Now she gives that amazing speech, America Ferrera, at the very end. So they really give her a showpiece at the end. But I could also understand they are just kind of there at the end of the movie while they are helping the Barbies get back control. She gives that great speech. I can't see maybe, you know, wanting more from that relationship. Do you agree, Meredith?
So that is one thing I do wish we had a little bit more time with. If we had like maybe one or two more scenes of kind of seeing more of that progression of her daughter warming up to the mother. But on the whole of like, if there were things to be left on the cutting room floor, like if that was part of it, like it didn't take away from my experience of it, but I still would have liked to see more of them. And I honestly wish we had a little bit more of Midge, the pregnant Barbie, because like, I think and it's Emerald Fennell, another great actress, director, in the role. And I just love anytime she gets to pop up for anything. So I wish we could have had like more from her, but we had a lot to do in Barbie Land once the Kens took over. So, you know,
I totally agree. I didn't know that was her playing pregnant. She's the director of writer Promising Young Woman. Correct? Yep. Love that movie. Wow, that's awesome. So I guess let's each talk about one scene that really stood out to us. Then we'll go into our final thoughts before we move on to Oppenheimer. I'll just start off by saying the scene to me where I just kind of I was loving the movie, but that Ken musical number at the very end really kind of brought it home for me. And I was already really enjoying the movie and having a blast. And I like it because it's so weird and funny at the same time. Like, there were times where I was laughing. I was like, this is really weird. Like, what's happening right now? But then I was like, I don't know, but I'm loving it. And there's a shot of Ryan Gosling, like, just on a bed while he's singing. The man looked like he was made in a laboratory. Like, men don't all look like that. I was just like, Ryan, you're making it so much harder for all of us. But Gosling, again, to me, is kind of the MVP of this movie. Although I don't want to take anything away from Margot. I thought she was fantastic. He was just so funny, and I agree. I think, depending on the competition this year, he might be up for Best Supporting Actor because he's just so good in this movie. So to me, that Ken, that final Ken number that leads into that battle on the beach, which is also very weird, but the movie is so... I love that the movie wasn't afraid to be that weird because I think Mattel has to get a lot of credit for this movie because they let her do this stuff. Because I think on paper, if I was a producer, I'd be like, people aren't going to get this. Like, what are we doing here? Like, this is so out there. But you know what? I'm glad Mattel's being rewarded with this box office for actually taking a chance on a movie that wasn't just copy and paste, wasn't your run-of-the-mill Barbie movie. They actually took a chance on a great director with a script that you do not see. It's not generic in any way possible. So I love that musical number. It's on YouTube. You go watch it right now. I can't wait to go see. I might go see it in theaters again just to have that experience with the audience and just enjoying the movie. Because that's one thing while I was watching this movie in the sold out theater, you could just feel the everybody in the movie theater was having such a good time. And that's why we go to the movies. We want that communal experience. You want to share that feeling of joy and, you know, just cinema, like Nicole Kidman says. So that's my favorite scene. And I guess that's my overall thoughts on the movie. Benny, I know this is going to be hard for you, so I'll let you give me your favorite scene and then your just overall thoughts on the film.
The music numbers I did appreciate. I thought those were exceptionally well done. My favorite scene, I can't remember the exact phrasing. It's when she is in the car with her daughter and they're talking about her drawings and she's like, this is Barbie obsessed with death. This is cellulite Barbie. That was the most like interesting scene for me in the movie. And I was like, and that's why I sort of say out of the entire film, the relationship between those two is what I gravitated to. I was like, I would have liked that to have been the movie as opposed to what the movie was. And so my final thoughts is for a comedy, for me personally, it didn't work. I didn't really find it funny. The actors do a really good job. The sets are immaculate. The musical numbers are well done. But it's also an opinion thing. Like, I think if you watch the trailers and you found the humor in the trailers worked for you, they do give you that kind of humor in the movie. So if that worked for you, feel confident going into the movie. You're going to laugh. It didn't work for me, but, you know, so be it. It doesn't sometimes. Now, what I will be, like, really interested in going forward is, like you said, like, I don't think Greta Gerwig did a paint-by-the-number Barbie's movie. I think you could have made this a very like kid friendly, you know, family summer movie and taken a lot fewer chances than they did. And so I'm really interested to see, not next week, this movie will still kill the box office next week. I do want to see how well it holds up past that, you know, to see if it's really resonating with people going forward, if it's going to have legs like Black Panther. And it may well, I don't know, but since it is not your typical family movie, I am really curious to see how it holds going forward.
Yeah, I will say before we go to Meredith, that's a good point because a lot of reviews and some people on social media said, I don't know if I would recommend you take your kid to this movie. A lot of these jokes I feel will go over a child's head. Like if you're bringing a five-year-old to see this movie, I think they're going to like the color palette. They're going to like the vibe and the energy of the film, but I don't know if they'll actually find it funny or they'll just be distracted by how over the top and beautiful and how the production, and it's, I think they'll feel good watching it, but I don't know if they're going to really understand most of the story and most of these jokes. But I mean, I have no problem. I would have no problem telling someone to bring their kid. I'd be like, yeah, go see it. You're going to love it. Your kid's going to be entertained. So I think if, at the end of the day, it will accomplish that. So yeah, Meredith, give me a scene that really stood out to you and just your overall thoughts on the film.
Yeah, so I mean, I feel like I have to talk about this scene, the America Ferrera women monologue, which, you know, Saoirse Ronan had hers as Jo March in Little Women. So to have kind of an extended one that continues to play on the complications and contradictions of like what we as women deal with in society all the time about, you know, like, you can never say you want to be thin. You have to say that you want to be healthy, but you still want to be thin. You can't ask for money because that's crass. You can't, you have to be a boss, but you can't be mean. You have to stay pretty for men, but you can't be too pretty because you're looking out for the sisterhood. Like, there is so much in there that like we in society just like feel on a day-to-day basis. And so to have America just really deliver this just beautiful like speech, and you know, that be what wakes up the Barbies, you know, remembering like what it means for them to be women and to hold power in Barbie land, to remind them of like who they are. It was just such a beautiful and powerful scene for me, only second to Barbie scenes with Ruth Handler, Ruth Handler, who created Barbie, and to have this moment between like the creator and her creation, and to see the legacy. And I think one of my favorite lines of hers is like, "We mothers sit back just to see how far our daughters go." And so, like, I'm excited to share this movie with my mom, and so that she can. To see her reaction to it. I don't know if I would show, like, I don't have kids, but like I would be hesitant to show my daughter at 5 years old this movie, but I would totally show her this movie by like 8-10 years old, you know, and to have like that type of experience with her. So overall thoughts, like, I am floored by just the amount of trust. And I do say that loosely because I know that no matter what, all of these are big gambles. These are big studio projects with big budgets. And even with an IP like Barbie, that is still a gamble. And so to see Greta do something very original. And also, I think that Barbie can never be all of one thing to somebody, because as the movie acknowledges, Barbie can be a role model for women, but it could also be considered anti-feminist. Like, you put your ideas onto this doll, and that is what it is. And I feel like the movie really champions and celebrates that in a way that I think critiques Barbie's history, but also celebrates it in this like meta modern way that we've been doing in film recently. And I just adore what they did with this. And I mean, I'm just Ken deserves to be the song of the summer, honestly. Like, I've heard it pop up so much over this weekend, and it's really exciting just to see people just like sharing it over and over again. So yeah, I'm here for Barbie Land. I don't know if I want a sequel just yet, but I feel like they're gonna make a sequel.
That's a good point. I feel like box office alone says there should be a sequel, but I almost hope Greta just doesn't do it. And if they do it, maybe give it to somebody else. Cause it just really felt like she said everything she wanted to say. And it really felt like her voice. And I got to give Greta another big piece of credit, because you touched on the speech, and the very end of the film is very touching. And for this movie to be as silly and over the top as it is, but at the same time, give you some heartfelt moments and actually be kind of touching at the end, is not easy. I love Anchorman. I think it's hilarious. It's one of my favorite comedies, but at no point is that movie trying to make you feel good or emotional, or, you know, make you feel something like that. And the fact that she actually pulled it off this movie just goes to show how great of a director she is and how great of a writer she is. So big fan of Barbie. You know, I'm glad, Benny, you had a different opinion. The comedy didn't work for you. And I'm glad you're able to talk about, you know, what didn't work, because there are people out there who are on the same page as Benny that I see online. And, you know, our friend Dan Merle definitely had some criticisms that Benny shared with the film as far as like tone and stuff. And he did a great job, and Benny did a great job of, you know, expressing why it didn't work for you. And that's what makes films just awesome, because we all have our, we all take our life perspective and we put it onto what we see in the cinema, and it all affects us differently. And speaking of that, we're about to go to another man of cinema, Chris Nolan. I almost said Jonathan Nolan. I don't know if Jonathan Nolan co-wrote this one or not.
I don't think he, actually, no, I think he might have, I can double check that.
They usually work together in tandem. But yeah, we're about to go to the second half of Barbenheimer and we are going to talk. That's right, everybody. Oppenheimer, the 3-hour epic from Christopher Nolan. Both these movies are in the 90s on Rotten Tomatoes. They're not only successful in the box office, but they're successful with critics. So I'm really excited to get into this movie because it's a lot. It is a lot. So, all right, guys, do me a favor. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after these messages.
We're in some wild shape!
We're the stars and going to the beach!
And we're big time into California Dream Barbie!
California Dream Barbie's into fashion fun. She's into changing to bikinis in the California sun. She's into taking shots.
Palm tree earrings!
She's into laughing a lot. You know we're into it too. We just can't stop.
We're into Barbie!
California Dream Barbie doll comes with a Beach Boys record for you. Surf and shop and dolls all sold separately. From Mattel.
June the 6th, 1944, I was there. I'm certainly proud that I did my little part. Omaha Beach, St. Lo, later on the Battle of the Bulge. A show like Band of Brothers might let people know what we went through.
The HBO miniseries, Band of Brothers. Available now in DVD and VHS box sets at Walmart.
Certainly we were a Band of Brothers. So many didn't make it, but their sacrifice was for other people to live.
Welcome back, everybody. Do you hear that explosion in the background? It is time for Chris Nolan's Oppenheimer, the second part of this weekend's cinema celebration of Barbenheimer, a movie that I was really looking forward to. And I'll be honest with you, not a huge fan of his last two films. I was one of those people who didn't really understand what the heck was going on in Tenet. Beautifully shot, some epic scenes. But I remember being like walking out of theater and saying, I might have to go take a class at college because I'm not quite sure what happened in most of that movie. Dunkirk, on the other hand, is a movie that I didn't really resonate with me when I first saw it. But after watching it again at home, I kind of appreciate it more. Nolan loves to play with time. That guy cannot tell a movie from beginning to end. It's very hard for him, especially when he's not doing a Batman movie. So I will say, going into this film, the reviews really got me excited because, and I was excited also that it seemed to be a more of a streamlined biopic. I'm somebody who loves history. I love biopics. So this movie felt like it was right up my alley. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to give our overall thoughts. I'm going to go last this time because I want to switch up the order here. We'll go Benny, Meredith, then myself. And let's just open it up. Non-spoiler, our overall thoughts, walking out of theater. Benny, how'd you feel about Chris Nolan's Oppenheimer?
Well, after talking about Barbie, I'm just glad I can talk about a comedy that really worked for me with Oppenheimer. So I'm a mark for this kind of movie. Like, I love World War One, World War Two dramas, and I really love the behind the scenes ones where you're getting to see the people like making the policies and things like that. Love books about it, love movies about it. I think this is definitely Christopher Nolan's best movie. Wow. You know, I watched through his entire filmography like a couple years ago, and I think this is by far the best. But that being said, and this is, I think, is a very good movie. Don't think it's the best movie in this particular genre, but nonetheless, it's a very solid biopic. And I think he did a really good job engaging you in a movie where it in of itself does not have a lot of action. I thought there were a lot of good performances. I think Cillian Murphy, he really looks the part of Oppenheimer. Yeah. So it made you really feel like you were actually watching the guy's life unfold. And Robert Downey Jr., man, like he brought it hard in this movie. Like, you know, I've not seen him in like a dramatic role in a long time. Man, he brought it hard. I would say like a, well, we can get into it more in spoilers. Like initially, I think the female characters in the movie were super one-dimensional. But that's like my main criticism. And a lot of times, but we'll talk about more when we get into spoilers. But overall, excellent World War II drama. I think it's Christopher Nolan's best movie. But I do think there are other movies in this very specific subgenre of World War II movies that are better than this one.
Wow, can't wait to dig into some of the things you said. Meredith, go ahead, give us your overall thoughts walking out of Oppenheimer.
Well, I mean, after I walked out of Oppenheimer, there was just a lot of, you know, time to take it in. I can't believe that 3 hours had gone by. There was only a handful of spots in the film that I felt was starting to drag, but it kind of like picked itself back up in a lot of places, particularly that third act after the Trinity bomb went off, which that scene is stunning. The whole anticipation leading into it was just like had me on pins and needles. It was so well done. I think it's so surprising to not talk about Hans Zimmer with a Christopher Nolan movie, but Ludwig Göransson just like set this, just took the score to a whole new level with Oppenheimer. I just thought it was so fantastic. The performances are spectacular. Cillian Murphy just really became Oppenheimer. Robert Downey Jr., I'm Team Iron Man or Die. So to see Robert Downey Jr. just give a performance like this is just so refreshing. But also it's a reminder of how talented he actually is. And if I'm speculating early, I would say he's my front runner for best supporting actor in this race. Like, I think he gets the nomination easily, and he's definitely one to watch out for award season. However, the strike affects that. Like, he's so good in it. The only person that I felt was underutilized was Florence Pugh, and that's like just because of how they handle her character in particular. But I ended up being very impressed by Emily Blunt. The further we went into the film from when she was first introduced. I'm not quite ready to call it Christopher Nolan's best. I do think it is of his best stuff, and I do think it is a masterpiece. I am a Dark Knight girl through and through, so it's very hard to top that movie for me personally, but I can easily see Oppenheimer being in like my top three personal rankings. For him, I just think what a stunning biopic! What a great, like, so much craft and skill on display. Also, very limited CG being used. Very much still playing in Christopher Nolan's like sandbox of like time and how he is like showing this film or like having the story go out. I'm just in awe of the work that he has done here. It is truly masterful stuff.
Interesting. I agree with several things both of you have said. So walking to this movie, I heard a lot of comparisons to Oliver Stone's JFK, which I love that film. I think it's a masterpiece. Roger Ebert named it one of the best films of the 90s. So it was a movie. So I was not trying to get my expectations that high, but I love JFK. I think it's an amazing film. And there's some characters in this movie, like Gary Oldman, who also appears in this film. And again, as I said, I did not love the last two Nolan films, but because this was more of a biopic and I feel like you're going to get too crazy like you did in Tenet, my expectations were pretty high. I think this is close to a masterpiece. I don't think it's quite there. I think the first 2 hours of this film feel like the energy, the pacing was fantastic. I thought Nolan, along with the music, like you mentioned, Meredith, was almost like this building. The whole movie was just building and building and building. And then when he gets about the two-hour mark, something happens, events happen. And then there's like this third act, which almost feels like a prologue. It almost feels like something that could have been not taken off the movie, but could have been condensed or intercut with the other things that were happening throughout the movie. And it is a little bit, and I'll get to more down to spoilers, and I can't wait to hear what Meredith has to say. But I felt like the energy of those first 2 hours and 15 minutes or so kind of died down. And I think that was the point. I don't think Nolan knows what he's doing. I think the point is, once that character accomplished what he accomplishes, he has to wrestle with it. And I think I would have liked a little bit more of that character wrestling with it and not him being caught up in what the government was trying to do to him. Which, again, it's hard to give spoilers for history, but there were a lot of things in this film I didn't know about as I was watching it. I knew about Oppenheimer. I know about the Manhattan Project. But this movie did a great job of really putting you in these people's shoes and the timetable and the pressure the government was putting on them. All that worked for me so well. I think the performances across the board are fantastic. I think the casting of all these other actors, like Alex Wolff and Josh Hartnett, they all do great jobs, and they're not – he doesn't cast people to, like, make a big statement, or he's not like, I don't want this person to steal the movie. He just wanted good actors to play these roles, and everybody feels so comfortable in the skin of these characters. So for me, it is – I would put it in the upper half of the Nolan filmography. I'd have to go back. I rewatched The Prestige. I just wanted to watch another Nolan movie.
I just saw it for the first time, and oh, I was really? Like, why was I late on this? So good.
So good. So that's the only film I revisited of Nolan's before this, because I think it was the one I hadn't seen the most recent. Like, I love Inception, love the Dark Knight trilogy. I like Insomnia. I like his earlier work. I like Memento. I think Memento is fantastic. So, like, I'm a big Nolan fan. It was just recently I didn't really vibe with his last couple films. I think Interstellar is amazing at times, but I think the third act kind of falls apart for me. And while this movie, I didn't like the third act as much, it wasn't like Interstellar where I was just like, this is a mess. I understand exactly what he was doing, and I think it works for a lot of people. I'll just get into spoilers of why it didn't quite work for me. And it's not what didn't completely work. It was just such a tonal shift of what the movie was before that. It was hard for me to, like, stay with the same, you know, wavelength that he was going for. But overall, I think at 3 hours, this is a really entertaining film for the most part. I think it's great performances. To make a 3-hour drama about them building a bomb to be this thrilling, and the craftsmanship, like you said, so much love was put into this project. And I will say the first, like, 15 minutes, I love the pacing of the film. It's almost like a montage at times. It's like getting you caught up so we could get to the Manhattan Project. But we'll get to more spoilers. But overall, for me, a successful film. I really enjoyed my time in the theater. I will say, like Meredith, you said 3 hours it went by. It did for the most part for me. And then I do feel like the third act kind of slows down.
So I think from the after, I mean, spoilers, like
handcuffs off.
They Spoiler tested time. A bomb and the bomb worked, and then it, you know, it got shipped off. So in that in-between time from when the bomb finally went off into once we cut really right back into the investigation that was going on with Oppenheimer and the Senate trial hearing for or the appointment for the cabinet position for Strauss, that's when it picked back up again for me. But I, thinking about it, I appreciate it because in the lulls there, that is when we do get to start seeing Oppenheimer really face the existential crisis of, like, you know, like, he is a scientist, and, like, part of science is exploration, and, like, how can we further science along? And he definitely did that. But once you get that out of the bag, like, once it's out, like, you can't undo it. And that's why the H-bomb stuff was, like, such a big deal. And, like, a lot of the McCarthyism that was going on during the time and Red Scare. So, like, I did appreciate it, but I do agree, like, after such anticipation there, it does lull for a little bit. And that's when I was like, okay, breathe. When are we going to get to the ending here? But when Rami Malek shows up, he is there for 3 scenes and he is so utilized well. That is why, like, when I think of the overall, like, ensemble that he has, for moments you're like, why is this person here for, like, a second? And then you're like, oh yeah, that's why, because they're great. Like Gary Oldman as Truman. He was Truman and Churchill. Get you a guy to do both.
Benny, let's stick with the third act a little bit, because I do think that is a point from a lot of reviews and other friends of mine have seen it. There is some divide there where some people are like, man, the last 45 minutes really kind of dragged and was, you know, I think are great moments in that third act, in those last 45 minutes, like the scene where he is giving a speech and everything blacks out. Like, that's a haunting scene. But I don't know if there's, I hate to tell, I'm not telling no one what to do, but I think there was a better way to condense it and working to the movie without the last 45 minutes just being the trial. So, Betty, did that work for you, the whole trial after the bombing?
It did, and I may be giving Christopher Nolan too much credit, but I feel like it is intentional. Like, Oppenheimer, you know, the entire movie is building to this one mega climactic event of the bomb being created. And in a lot of ways, his life was like that. Like, you know, if you're a history buff, like, it's pretty easy to know about Oppenheimer up through the Manhattan Project. But then after that, after the momentous moment when the cameras go away and the excitement goes away, you know, he still lived out his life. And to me, it felt like it was intentional. You had the excitement, this rush to this big moment. And then after that, it's taking stock and winding down for the rest of your life. So to me, the movie worked, like, flowed like someone's life actually would. And so I thought it was a pretty successful use of pacing in that sense. But maybe I'm giving him too much credit for thinking that out. But at least that's the way I perceived it.
No, I agree with that, Benny, because, and then it's also, I think, a commentary on, like, how we perceive people and, like, how we remember people. Once they do their great thing, they kind of end up fading from obscurity, or when they are no longer useful to the government, then they're on their hit list, you know? And I think, like, to show that aspect of him and the fact that we keep flashing back to this scene with Einstein, that, like, he walks away very solemnly and then we finally get the full context of the conversation at the end, is really impactful. And I like how Nolan, like, in the first two acts, when he cut back to the investigation, like, some of these these interviews that are happening, some of the answers are just, like, not answered. And then we get that, we get the resolution of that later. And I like the way that he pieces it together. And I think that's where, in those 45 minutes, like, at the end, it really brings it all home and kind of ties it together and shows, like, yeah, like, the full ups and downs of, like, this great man's life, for better and for worse in the world, you know?
What's so interesting hearing you guys talk about this third act, I love the moments where we just get Oppenheimer with him dealing with the aftermath. And I guess for me, at some point, it felt like, now we're kind of telling the story about Robert Downey Jr., who I thought was amazing in the movie, and I agree will be nominated for Best Supporting Actor, and it probably is the front runner as of right now. It became more about him, who was wronged by Oppenheimer and felt like he was wronged by him, like, getting revenge by trying to kind of ruin his name by putting up this, you know, council together to really, you know, give him a disposition. And just, it's not a trial, they kept saying. So the movie in some ways became more about Robert Downey Jr., the government, and how they treated Oppenheimer than Oppenheimer really dealing with the aftermath of the bomb. Now, anytime in those 45 minutes when they would cut to him, like I said, the speech, the very ending when he has the talk with Albert Einstein, I thought was awesome, because you saw that same conversation from Robert Downey Jr.'s perspective. I loved all that stuff. I loved all the stuff with Oppenheimer and what was going on with him and his psyche and wrestling with what he did. And for me, the movie at times seemed a little bit more interested in Robert Downey Jr.'s character trying to take his, you know, tear him down. So I think it's all really well done. That's the thing. It's not like I think that he did a bad job portraying how they basically railroaded him and how they tried ruining his name. And I think they did have to show that, because that's, according to the book that Nolan based this on, it actually happened. I guess I would have liked the better balance of Oppenheimer's personal life and what he was going through than the betrayal and Robert Downey Jr. trying to get revenge on Oppenheimer because he thinks he kind of embarrassed him one time at, like, a previous thing.
Well, and I think that kind of reminds me of The Prestige right there. You have these two conflicting magicians who are trying to one-up each other all the time. And Strauss is very represents that, like, he looks at Oppenheimer and looks at his success and he wants that for himself. And then from a moment of like a wounded ego, it set him on a course of revenge and trying to wreck this man's reputation. And so I think that's like very on the nose for Nolan to continue doing that.
Yeah, that's a good point. So let's talk about the cast a little bit. I think Matt Damon is something that hasn't been brought up a lot. I think he's fantastic.
So good
as a general. I'll just start off with him. But Benny, who else stood out to you in this cast? Was it Gary Oldman as Truman? Was it Matt Damon being the hard-nosed general? Was it Josh Hartnett being his kind of his right-hand man? Was it Casey Affleck who shows up for like one scene and is just like puts the fear of God in people? What actors and scenes really stood out to you on this huge ensemble? Rami Malek also, just Meredith mentioned, came in and killed it.
So Robert Downey Jr.'s performance, it stands out the most of anyone's simply because it's been so long since you've seen him do something like this, probably since Chaplin, where he's just like full on dramatic performance, really bought in, you know?
Yeah.
And so his stood out the most and was the most impressive to me. But like, I have one positive and like sort of one negative. So I don't think Emily Blunt, they gave like her character a full range of life. They just sort of showed her, you know, suffering because of Oppenheimer's life, you know. But I think she had the best single scene in the movie where he's laying down after Florence Pugh commits suicide and she slaps him and says, you know, you don't get to sin and then have people feel sorry for you.
Yeah.
To me, that almost became the theme of the rest of Oppenheimer's entire life, where he did this one momentous thing that brought about something horrible, and then he's still trying to martyr himself, even though it's something he intentionally did. To me, the rest of the movie almost hangs on that scene, and I thought she delivered that like perfect. You could have delivered that line better than she did. Now, one that did not work for me, actually, was Gary Oldman as Truman.
Okay.
I felt he was doing as sort of a caricature. Like, if you remember The Fifth Element, where he's Emmanuel Zorg.
Yeah,
I felt like I was watching Emmanuel Zorg do an impression of Harry Truman.
Okay.
And so that just, it didn't particularly work for me.
He didn't get a lot of time. Yeah. I will say it's one scene.
Yeah, it is. But Matt Damon, he did a great job of being like the one honorable character in the entire movie. Like, for a 3-hour movie filled with thousands of people, and he's the one guy that didn't come off as an asshole in the entire movie.
Understood. Meredith, do you agree with some of the things Benny said? Who stood out for you?
So I do want to say, like, with Emily Blunt, I also really liked her scene with Jason Clarke when he's questioning her. She is the only one, like, she's been fighting back, whereas, like, Oppenheimer himself has been very subdued through that whole process. So to see her spar with him was also really well done. So I think that was great. I also really want to highlight Alden Ehrenreich. I thought he did really good in the film, especially his stuff, obviously, with Robert Downey Jr. And then his last scene with him was just so well done. I thought Benny Safdie did a really great job, as well as Teller. David Krumholtz, for a moment, I was like, oh my gosh, that's David Krumholtz. And I thought he was great as well. Obviously, Matt Damon, we mentioned. I love Florence Pugh. I just wish we had more with her, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, this cast is so huge, so I'm trying not to, like, forget people. So many. But, like, there's just so many. I did mention, obviously, Rami Malek. I was like, why is he here just in the background? And then he really made it count. I was very excited to see Jack Quaid, not only in the movie, but also rocking a holiday sweater and banging on some bongo drums, which, according to historians, is accurate. That is what that scientist would do. So I love the attention to detail there. And also shout out Josh Peck as well, pressing the button and changing history forever. So.
Yeah, the Florence Pugh thing, but I agree with that. But go ahead, Benny. What do you want to say?
Yeah, I had a quick question for you guys about Alden Ehrenreich's character. Mm-hmm. Now, there, one thing about his character, I thought he delivered everything really well. But with the character itself, there seemed like this really abrupt shift where he's really working for this guy. And then, like, all of a sudden, he's thrilled that his career is going off the rails and he's, you know, failed this guy whose livelihood he probably depends on. Did I miss something there, or was there some kind of foreshadowing as to why he's glorying in the senator's failure all of a sudden?
I read it as Robert Downey Jr. telling him throughout the movie. I mean, their sequence is only taking place over a couple of days. Mm-hmm. I think Robert Downey Jr., through his selfishness and revenge, kind of shows himself to who he really is. Okay. And maybe he had a different view of him when the day started, but by the end of the trial, he's no longer believes he's probably the right guy for the job, okay, and probably loses respect for him. That's how I kind of read it. Agree,
that's also how I read it. That's how I read it as well.
Excellent. Thank you, guys. I appreciate that.
No problem. But yeah, Florence Pugh, I do think was underutilized. I was hoping she'd be in the movie a little bit more. I think she's good in the scene she's in, but we don't get a lot of backstory there. And Florence Pugh is such a great actress, and she did a great job. I would have loved to see more from her. And I will agree, Emily Blunt has two of the best scenes in the movie. But I will say I was a little worried in the beginning because it was very much she was drinking, she was being mean. And I was like, man, is she just there to be like this alcoholic, mean wife? But the movie does eventually give her more to do, and it gives her character. She's really the backbone of the couple. Like she, like you said, that scene where she slaps him, like, get it together. She's the one that keeps telling him, go after him. Why are you just going to sit there and take it? So in the beginning, I was a little worried about how she was being portrayed, even if it was probably true to life. They really give her something to do in the second half of the film, especially towards the end. Matt Damon's fantastic. Like I said before, I like seeing him in these kind of roles. He, like you said, he's the one guy who's even keel throughout the whole movie. Like, you know who he is from beginning to end. And even when he has to, towards the end, when they're doing like this, you know, fake trial, he is, even though he has to say the things he has to say about Oppenheimer, like, he only does it begrudgingly and says he has all the respect for the guy. He sticks up for him at the end of the day. But yeah, all those actors you mentioned, Meredith, are fantastic. The Truman thing worked for me, but I was like, oh, it's Gary Oldman. I think he's a great actor, but it's a very small morsel of time. And maybe you could have just got another actor who we don't know, but you're Christopher Nolan. You got the juice. Give Gary Oldman one scene. Why not? If you could get him, take him. So let me talk about what scene would you guys point out that really stood out to you? This is a 3-hour film. Lots going on. Is there anything that really stuck out to you throughout the film that really kind of you're like, man, I can't wait to see this movie again. And that's one sequence I'm looking forward to coming up. I'll start with you, Betty.
Well, I already mentioned Emily Blunt, which I think is the best individual scene in the movie. There's two others that I really appreciated. One at the very end where Fermi is walking up to them when Oppenheimer is getting the sort of his end-of-life award. Mm-hmm. And he goes to shake the hand, and Oppenheimer, still playing the martyr, shakes his hand. And then Emily Blunt's like, fuck you, buddy. Walk on. And I love that because I think that sort of summed up where both of them were later in life, is that she was still fighting and he was just, you know, playing the victim to some extent. So I really appreciated that scene. And I guess I must have really appreciated Fermi's character, because when they're sitting there waiting on the bomb, it was just a visual that I really loved, where everyone's laying on their back and he's sitting there with ink on his face, just staring into the thing. And he's ultimately somebody that makes an even bigger nuclear bomb. So he's the one person staring in fascination. So I really appreciated that visual.
Yeah, good scenes. Meredith, anything that stuck out for you?
I mean, it's hard to talk about this movie without talking about the bomb itself. I just think that was just such a stunning sequence. And I love the way that, like, it is true to science that it is silent first. And so we get the real scope and magnitude of it going off before the sound comes in. And so when it does, it just hits impeccably. The buildup, the tension, they really make this moment in history matter. And something that I also appreciate after the fact is that while this obviously, like, changed the world. It had massive impact in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And I'm really glad that we never saw any footage of the damage that happened, nor did we see any of the survivors and just the injuries that they incurred. Like, we see, you know, Oppenheimer look down as people are being flashed images, but we don't even get to see them. And I think that is, it goes into the complicated nature of all of it, and also gives it kind of like a respectful look of like, this had lasting damage on a country in a way that like we can only like fathom, at least from us as Americans. So to see that kind of like been given sensitivity was something that like really stood out to me as well.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think that was a masterstroke to show just the projector light on their faces as they're showing what they did. This is what the result of what you created. And to show Oppenheimer look down, I thought it was just a masterful scene, not showing anything. Not, I was worried. I was like, are they going to show the plane in the sky dropping the bomb? I'm glad they didn't do any of that. I thought it was great that he's literally sitting there waiting for the phone call. It's not like today. We don't have social media. They didn't have texting. You literally had to wait for a phone call to know if the bomb you created worked again and how bad was the damage. And I think one of my favorite scenes from the movie is when he goes to meet with those generals and they decide whether or not they should even use the bomb. And that's kind of there's a prelude to that where all the scientists are having a meeting without Oppenheimer. Like, hey, German gave up. Why should we continue this? And he's like, but at the end of the day, the general says, we're going to save so many more lives by ending this war. Because if you have to do a ground war in Japan, the numbers would have been through the roof. It would have been, the war would have gone longer. A lot more people would have died. You know, that's something he had to wrestle with this movie. I also loved the first hour of this film. I loved the very beginning where he sees the world in a different way, because once you study and, you know, start working with atoms and molecules and you bring everything down to a scientific scale, life, I think you just see it differently. And I thought the way Nolan intercut these things of physics and lights and sounds, and you could just see that he was struggling with what he knows the world and life and everything around him is made up of. And I thought that was fantastic. And I love a movie where it's like we're putting a team together. The whole thing where they're recruiting all the scientists, they're building the town. That movie was just moving so well at that point. I was just like, man, this is a 3-hour movie, but if this pace keeps up, I'm going to be exhausted by the end of this thing. And it's really hard to pull off a movie that with this much dialogue, especially about science, and always keep you engaged. And I think that's one thing Nolan did really well in this film. It reminded me of some of his older films where the pacing and the music just da-da-da-da-da. But before, he was doing it with Batman. He was doing it with Inception. He had worlds collapsing each other. He brings that same energy and focus to scenes of dialogue and people walking around, making buildings, talking to scientists. So it was so interesting to see Nolan kind of put his style into this kind of film, a biopic, honestly. Let me one last question before we get to overall thoughts. As we know, Nolan loves jumping around. Did it work for you jumping from before, after, middle? Everything's kind of intersected. They keep jumping into before and after. Would you have appreciated it maybe a little bit more if it was all linear? Or did you enjoy the intercutting of different time periods throughout the film? I'll start with you, Meredith.
I actually liked it. And, kicking my laptop over here. Because it's Christopher Nolan, I expected a level of that happening, you know, of time being jumped around with. I really liked that the points of view between Strauss of being in black and white, and very much how I think he sees the world versus Oppenheimer's being in color, a very subjective look, and just like his life and the messiness that like came with it. I like that that was in color. So I liked that we got to see certain scenes in flashbacks in their own respective timelines, which was really cool. So I was a fan of it. Like I've seen enough traditional linear stories, war stories. Like I like Benny, I also like World War II stories. So I have seen my fair share of them. So to have something a little bit different like this, you know what it reminded me of a little bit? It reminded me a bit of Little Women, Greta Gerwig, how she went back and forth of the different moments in time in that book. So, yeah, I was a fan of that choice for him.
What about you, Betty? And let me add this. The ending, I'm kind of curious if there's an edit of this movie where the trial ends at the same time the bomb is successful. If there's a way to intercut those last 45 minutes into the first 2 hours, that's my editing brain as I was watching the movie, because the pacing is so different in those, in that prologue. Betty, did it work for you? And do you think that would work?
So this is a weird thing. Like, I, especially like you, in his last few movies, I think Nolan has not been very successful with his use of time.
Agreed.
Like, he's an excellent storyteller. He's a shitty philosopher. That's just my personal opinion as a philosophy, you know, someone that has a philosophy degree. But in this movie, I think he needed to play with time like he did, because it's so dense. If you had just told this story in like a straight linear fashion, it would have been exhausting. And eventually you would have just got lost in the dialogue. At least this way, like every 20 minutes, when you're cutting to something different, your brain has to reset and be like, oh, we're going somewhere different now, and you don't get lulled into just the conversation. So I thought it was really successful here. Whereas, you know, in whatever the one with Batman, the new Batman.
Yeah.
No.
Batman.
Yes.
All right. Awesome. Well, great, guys. This was a fantastic conversation about Barbie and Oppenheimer. We'll go to final thoughts. Give me your, we kind of give our final thoughts on Oppenheimer, but go ahead and give me a small summary, but throw Barbie in there too. Let's just talk about the whole Barbie Oppenheimer experience and what it meant to you. I'll start off and just say two very different movies, but I think both of them were so successful in what they were trying to accomplish. I had such a good time in Barbie that when I left the theater, I was just laughing. I just felt great. I had a big smile on my face. I didn't come out of Oppenheimer that way, because it is not a movie that is trying to do that. I came out thinking, man, I feel like I just went through an experience. The cinema of Nolan at like just full power. And also it gave me something to think about. Like, while there is stuff to think about Barbieheimer, I think Oppenheimer is talking about something on a larger scale in a lot of ways, life, humanity, and the atom bomb. So to me, I think it's like a lot of people said, go see Oppenheimer. Or no, they said, go see Barbie and then go see Oppenheimer, because that way you're going to be able to really chew on Oppenheimer. I feel like it's the opposite. Go see Oppenheimer. Think about, go have lunch. Think about that movie. And then end the day with Barbie. And then you're just going to have a great, you're just going to be on cloud nine because you just had such a good time. And then, you know, during the week, go back and start thinking about Oppenheimer. Start watching some History Channel documentaries. Go read some articles. Because there's a lot of things you can really dive into with the history of the atom bomb and the Manhattan Project. Nolan just told Oppenheimer's story. There's so many more interesting stories around that whole situation, the Manhattan Project. There's so many other, there's a whole TV series dedicated to the building of the atom bomb. So I think there's a lot of stuff you can really get into. But I mean, at the end of the day, I'll probably end up watching Barbie more because it's just an easier watch. It's something I can put on just for a good time. Oppenheimer, I have to be in that. I have to be in the mood for a 3-hour epic about about World War II, and it's going to be something. But I will say, having this talk with you guys, I'm excited to watch Oppenheimer again, because now that I know the pacing and what to expect in that third act, I think I will enjoy it more, and I'll be more prepared for the pace, the shift in the pace and the shift in tone from that movie goes from the bomb to the fake trial. So I'm actually excited to revisit Oppenheimer. I might go see it in theaters. Wait until the, you know, that IMAX 70mm, the true IMAX at City Walk. Tickets were unbelievably hard to get for like the first week. So once it calms down a little bit, maybe I'll go see it one more time in that theater. And I probably will go see Barbie again, because I just want to have a good time. So that's my thoughts on Barbie and Oppenheimer weekend. Benny, go ahead and we'll close out with Meredith.
Well, I would say this, like, if you've listened to this show or if you've listened to my YouTube trivia thing, you probably know my taste in comedy. Barbie did not work for me. But like I said, I think I've liked two comedies that were made after 1993. So take it with a grain of salt. For Oppenheimer, it's a really wonderful historic epic. If you're into World War II movies, especially if you like movies like Imitation Game and Darkest Hours, where they're very dialogue behind the scenes of World War II driven, you will love this movie if you loved those. And I would also like to encourage people, if you've not seen this old made-for-TV HBO movie called Conspiracy with Stanley Tucci, which falls into a similar category as this movie, give it a watch. It's very different because it's told from a Nazi perspective. The entire movie, it's like this from a German perspective. Really fascinating stuff. But in the end, Oppenheimer is excellent. Barbie wasn't for me, but I hope it impacts everyone the way it did Meredith.
Awesome. Meredith, closing thoughts on this magical weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I've been excited for Barbenheimer since the very first meme came out about Barbenheimer, of like Barbie and Oppenheimer coming out the same day. Oh my gosh, this is just like 2008 all over again with Mamma Mia and The Dark Knight, and those being, you know, very impactful movies for both demographics that they were targeted for. And I think Barbie and Oppenheimer both explore and look at something that came into the world and impacted people for generations to come. You have Barbie, which impacted generations of women, and you have the A-bomb that impacted our world and still impacts it to this day. I think the ending of Oppenheimer is very like, it is still a forewarning of like, we still have these weapons out here. And if we are not careful about how we use them and the ways that we interact with that or with Barbie, you know, they have consequence, you know, it impacts our worldview. It impacts our futures. So I am so happy that two very respected filmmakers made the movies that they wanted to make. They had the budgets that they needed necessary. They used limited CG in order to tell the story that they wanted to tell. And I'm so excited that we as film fans, and it just seems like the larger public as a whole, has gotten into the idea of not only like championing these movies, but seeing them opening weekend. Like the box office numbers like says it all. And, you know, it's kind of hard to come down from the high of Barbenheimer because it's like, what weekend do we have to look forward to this year? Like, and now with, you know, the actors now on strike, and there is a lot of talk of films moving from this year into next year, like, what do we have to look forward to? So if Barbenheimer was the last great thing that we got this year, like, I mean, we've already peaked and it was July, you know, July 21st was the day Barbenheimer changed the world. So, yeah, I'm so happy for these movies. I'm so excited to go back and revisit them. Honestly, like, I am excited to see Oppenheimer again. I'd love to fit in another Barbie screening because it's less than 2 hours. So it's so much easier to like pop into that. But yeah, I'm happy for the success of both. And I like that I'm a fan of both, you know, that I get to walk away being like, yeah, these both worked for me. And the hype was real. So
awesome. Thank you so much, Meredith. That was a great summary. You know, the writer's strike and the actor's strike definitely could affect the rest of the year. They're already talking about moving Dune 2, which, come on, that was like the next big movie on the horizon. What's that?
They can keep moving Dune.
You know what, Benny, I wasn't a huge fan of Dune 1, but that's because it felt like half a movie to me. So I was excited for Dune 2 because I want to see how all works together. But Barbenheimer weekend is over. Hopefully something like this will happen again. I'm just glad to see cinemas full of people. And I'm glad both of these movies delivered. I'm just glad they're successful. And I hope the studio sees I hope they learn the right lessons from this weekend and not just let's make another IP movie. Let's not make, you know, hot cars or whatever and just put together a name label on a poster, try to sell tickets. Actually get artists and filmmakers who are passionate about what they're making, and this is what could happen. All right, so we'll just close out here. Benny, where can the people find you besides on this beautiful podcast?
Well, you can find me every Thursday night on the Last American Heroes YouTube channel, where we do movie trivia and say very offensive things. And, of course, you can find me here. And if you're ever in Southern Ohio, if they still make phone books, I'm probably in one of those.
Nice. Meredith, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me on the interwebs, the site formerly known as Twitter. I am still on there at Meredith Loftus. You can also find me on Instagram, Threads, Blue Sky. I also have stuff written in Collider, Next Best Picture, and Marvelous Geeks. And if you want to, I used to host my own podcast. If you want to go back and listen to old episodes, it's called Fangirl Forum. It's just me nerding out about basically stuff like this.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us, not just for Barbie, but for Oppenheimer also. This is a great celebration of cinema. I want to thank you guys for listening. Do us a favor, comment, subscribe, give us 5 stars. If you do, we'll read it off on the next podcast. We'll start checking them more consistently. All right, guys, thanks so much for listening. And of course, keep watching those movies.